This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's an experimental Enviro Show. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dio, and I'm not in the studio with...
Well, this is Glenn Ayers, and my motto is always the experiment, never the control.
Remember PETA's efforts to end animal torture at UMass and Amherst? Dr. Catherine Rowe returns to discuss the nightmarish tests coordinated by University of Massachusetts Amherst experimenter, or torturer, depending on how you look at it, Agnes LaCroix, and that was pulled only after one day. So hang on for that. Oh, and if you go to the blog, there's an actual link regarding such atrocities right at the top of the blog. But our guest this week, we'll be speaking about much more gentle critters, which bring us to our Enviro Show quote of the week. Quote, our task must be to free ourselves by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature and its beauty. And that was Albert Einstein. So Glenn, that takes us to our interview.
Yeah, and I think we should connect a few dots here and just do a little connecting of the first part of the show where we talked about this researcher at UMass, Agnes LaCroix, and the fact that, you know, there may be a really important job for her if his malignancy gets reelected. Because she could be in charge of a place like Guantanamo Bay, where she could, you know, she could torture all of the Democrats that the Project 2025 envisions, you know, locking up. And then they could, she could also be in charge of torturing all the migrants that they round up. You know, just it's really an opportunity. I think that, you know, she's maybe just been practicing for her real career as a, you know, a sidekick to his malignancy. But anyway, we will talk about that. I'm being facetious. I'm sorry, but we'll talk about that with Dr. Catherine Rowe in the interview. And then we'll come back and have a few more pithy comments. Today on the Enviro Show, we are joined by Catherine Rowe, Dr. Catherine Rowe, who works with the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, that's PETA. And we have covered this topic on the Enviro Show in the past. We've talked with folks about the UMass Torture Lab, where they're conducting experiments on marmoset monkeys, which are pretty small, really cuddly, beautiful, wild animals that are kept confined in cages and subjected to really unbelievably horrific and stupid experiments that have no scientific justification. So, Catherine, if you can give us an update from the last time we talked about this on the Enviro Show, and give us kind of what's happened over the past year with this topic, and then we'll get into, you know, the reason I think why we're talking about this is the overall issue of human supremacy over wildlife, over animals, over other creatures. And, you know, let's get into the philosophy a little bit, and then we'll talk about how people can get involved and help to stop the torture lab, shut down the torture lab at UMass Amherst.
That sounds great. Thank you again for having me and talking to me about this important topic. As you mentioned, there is a laboratory at the University of Massachusetts Amherst campus that is conducting what are so-called menopause experiments on tiny marmoset monkeys. What they're doing is keeping these monkeys in a cage 24/7, and they are trying through invasive procedures to induce menopause in these animals. Now, I want to be clear that marmoset monkeys are a unique primate species in that they don't actually experience menopause. So from the jump, this is already a ridiculous set of experiments. But in order to induce menopause in these tiny little monkeys, they are surgically removing the female's ovaries. They are forcing them to eat hormones that are supposed to suppress their hormone levels, and they're to try to induce hot flashes. They're applying heating pads to these monkeys and then doing all sorts of additional procedures like restraining them and putting them inside an MRI scanner, depriving them of fluid so that they'll perform these little cognitive tasks. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculously cruel, and it's scientifically unjust. You know, there's no data coming from this laboratory that is going to benefit humans in any way. And yet, you know, these experiments continue. And as you know, PETA has been working very hard to convince UMass Amherst, to convince the National Institutes of Health, which is funding all this, to stop this, because it's unspeakably cruel to the animals, and it's scientifically worthless. So it's just, it's sort of it's bad on top of bad. It's a waste of resources and it's cruel. So it needs to stop. And that's, you know, what we've been working on for the past several years. And we've had some success, which I can update you on. But the reality is these are still ongoing at UMass Amherst. And we're hoping that anybody listening can help us to end it.
Yeah. Catherine, if you could tell us, you know, what has PETA or the activists, you know, animal rights activists, what have they done over the past year surrounding this issue? I have been following it. We follow it pretty closely on the show. And I know there's been a number of actions where the messaging has been to stop the torture. And this has been done in public places at events where some officials, you know, UMass officials have been, I think, publicly shamed would be the word for it. But can you tell us about some of the actions that have happened over the past year?
Sure. We will try anything in the toolbox that we think will help. So as a scientist, I clearly reach out to members of the scientific community asking for their support and write any number of letters to overseers, including the USDA, NIH itself, the UMass Iacuc, et cetera, et cetera. But we also have activists who are willing to go to the campus and hold a protest where they're holding signs and handing out information to passersby at UMass events, whether that's a sporting event or a graduation ceremony, to really get eyes on the issue. Because the one thing that animal experimenters don't want is they don't want the public to know what they're doing. And so we spend a lot of time and energy and put a lot of effort into making sure that the general public knows what animal experimentation really looks like. And in the case of UMass Amherst, making sure the students who are attending that university know that this is happening at their campus, because the students are really, you know, for the most part, the voice of reason. They're the voice of progress, and they can make things happen in a way that a lot of people can't. So we always look for student support and make sure the students know this is happening. And again, that's, we attend events that the students are going to be at. We attend events that the chancellor or other UMass administrators are going to be at, and make sure they know that this is unacceptable. It's not just unacceptable to PETA, it's unacceptable to the PETA, to the people at large. And we're not going to rest until they end this, because again, it's unspeakably cruel and it's scientifically worthless.
So, you know, I can remember, I'm going to date myself here, going back, you know, 30 or 40 years, when there was a lot of controversy around animal testing labs, especially when it came to chimpanzees and other primates that are honestly very close to human in their genetic makeup. And for a long time, you know, there was a lot of controversy, but that became, I think, less favorable. There was a lot of public opposition to all kinds of cruel experiments to monkeys, and, you know, the higher primates, as they're called, the old world monkeys. And it also became too expensive for them to use those animals, especially as they became endangered species, you know, due to habitat destruction and all kinds of other things. And now it seems like they've switched over to these animals that are, you know, they look, honestly, they look like a children's, you know, teddy bear. They look like little stuffed animals. They're small, they're cute. And I'm assuming that they're using these animals because they can say that they're not closely related to humans. They're not human size. And, but at the same time, they're as cute and adorable as a puppy or a kitten or anyone's pets. And yet people would never stand for this kind of torture to be done to their own pets that they live with. And there seems to be a disconnect between the way people view the treatment of animals. And I'm not going to make a hierarchy of what animals deserve to be treated certain ways. They all deserve to be treated with respect and reverence because they're all living entities. They're all sentient creatures. And you know, I'm not a practicing Buddhist, but I do believe that we have to treat everyone the way that we expect to be treated. And in this case, we have someone who, I don't know, is this researcher a sadist? Are they doing this because there's something wrong with them? Or are they just doing it because this is a way for them to scam millions of dollars from the federal government through a process of getting grants so that they can conduct this horrific types of experiments on defenseless animals? And how do we make people understand that what we're doing to these critters is really what we're doing to ourselves? If we can treat other beings this way, then we can really essentially treat anyone with this kind of disrespect and other, you know, treat them as others. And that, you know, that's been part of a national conversation of trying to denigrate and you know, cast other people as less than human. Well, here we have an example where we're doing this at an institute of higher learning, of higher education, which should be the place, the citadel, you know, at the top of the hill, where these kinds of ideas become established for society to embrace. And yet we have this example of just the exact opposite of, you know, torture being permitted and encouraged and funded by the government. And how do we change that philosophical outlook on our relationship to animals? And really, the context is our relationship to nature as well.
Well, I agree with really everything that you just said. I think that our willingness to categorize animals as other, and usually that translates into less than, gives us some sort of justification in our minds to treat them as others and treat them as less than. And as you said, the same mindset that allows people to harm animals in this way is the same mindset that allows people to harm each other, you know, and so I do agree that there's a connection. You mentioned that, you know, the scientific experimenters who used animals used chimpanzees in the past, and that's correct. What's interesting is that nearly 10 years ago now, the Institute of Medicine did a review on where and how chimpanzees, who are our closest primate relatives, or humans' closest primate relatives, were being used in biomedical research, and determined that it wasn't worth the harm and the cost, and basically stopped using chimpanzees. And as you mentioned, what that led to was more different animals being used. So rather than an overall reduction in the use of animals in experimentation per se, which is what we needed to see happen, was we saw experimenters moving into using these other types of primates like marmosets. The justification that most people who experiment on these adorable monkeys use is that they're smaller and they're cheaper and they age faster than, say, rhesus macaques. That's the justification that the experimenter at UMass Amherst used. It wasn't that they were that these animals were a particularly good model for understanding human menopause or human cognition. It was because she can get her, you know, bad data faster because the animals age faster. That's a logistical reason. It's not a scientific reason to torment these animals. But the other reason people were promoting marmosets in particular was because they don't look as human-like as some of the other monkeys, like chimpanzees or rhesus macaques. And the hope was that humans who saw that marmosets were being experimented on wouldn't get as upset as they would if they saw other primates or, like you said, dogs or cats, animals that people have a relationship to. But again, just like you said, there's no hierarchy of pain and suffering and sentience across these species. What's cruel to do to a dog is cruel to do to a cat, is cruel to do to a mouse or a rat or a marmoset or a chimpanzee or another human. You know, the suffering is the same. The fear is the same. The pain is the same. And if we wouldn't justify doing this sort of thing to our fellow human beings, we shouldn't justify doing it to any other living sentient creature. And yet, the scientific community tends to forego that rational, reasonable argument, which they're supposed to be, you know, they're scientists. They should be able to follow a rational argument. And instead, you know, see an opportunity to get more grant money or to get a new publication. And in this case, to get a new publication faster because the species ages faster. The fact that the data is garbage seems to be irrelevant here. And that is doubly frustrating to me because it's cruel and it's crap. You know, I don't know how else to say it in terms of the science.
Do you think that some of the reluctance by the institutes, the funding institutes, are because of this history of human experimentation, you know, non-consensual human experimentation, such as the Tuskegee experiments that were done on African Americans or other ethnic groups that were, and in some cases, you know, Native Americans, you know, who were experimented on without consent, you know, sterilized and all kinds of horrific things done. And so there's this residual reluctance to look at humans. And I know that they've developed informed consent models and all kinds of other things since then. But is that part of this reluctance?
I don't think so. I think that the examples that you mentioned are horrific examples. I think that the reluctance to move towards more human relevant research is because an unfortunate percentage of biomedical experimenters don't want to get consent. Keep in mind that the millions of animals that are experimented on each year are always being experimented on without consent. And I think that we have, thankfully, for research that involves human volunteers, put a lot of mechanisms in place to make sure that they are now consenting. Now, obviously, that wasn't true in the past for human researchers in the examples that you mentioned, but I do think we've done a better job of making sure that any human volunteer who participates in a research study is getting informed consent. We, of course, have not done anything to improve the use of animals in that way. I think a lot of the reluctance that we're seeing is that, one, a lot of the animal experimenters who are employed today are trained on one thing and one thing only, animal experimentation. They don't know how to use these computer simulations. They don't know how to use these in vitro tools, these complex in vitro tools that are getting better and better each day. And they don't know how to consent a research participant because they've never worked with a research participant who they needed to get consent from. So I think that part of it is training and the lack of training for a lot of biomedical experimenters. You know, a lot of animal experimenters don't know how to use these other tools. And we need to make sure that those resources are available to them. I think it's psychological. I think a lot of people who start their career on animal experiments had to tell themselves, this is going to be worth something one day. This is going to help humans. You know, I'm decapitating a rat, but surely this will lead to a treatment for humans. And now they're almost stuck in that mindset. So I think there are quite a few obstacles in the way of getting people who currently experiment on animals to stop. But I don't think those obstacles are scientific. I think that there are any number of superior human-based research methods that the majority of people currently doing harmful experiments on animals could transition to. They just need to be willing to take the time and spend the energy to learn these new tools and to acquire funding, which, as I mentioned, NIH is starting to up. Like, NIH is starting to put more money out there for these alternatives, which is fantastic. Now we need people who are currently experimenting on animals to go after that money and stop. One thing I did want to mention is that for these marmosets, we have recently gotten some good news. So most of it has been bad news in that UMass Amherst has been refusing to shut down this lab, and we're seeing a lot of the marmosets in this lab getting injured. We've seen a few of them die unexpectedly, and we've definitely seen the experimenter kill several of the marmosets so that she could publish the data from their brain tissue, which she extracted after she killed. But PETA learned a couple of years ago now that the same experimenter at UMass Amherst was proposing to perform what she termed sleep fragmentation experiments on the animals. So keep in mind that, again, this experimenter is trying to induce symptoms of menopause in an animal species that doesn't naturally get menopause. And as I mentioned, she does this by cutting out their ovaries, by force feeding them compounds that alter their hormone levels, and of course, these ridiculous heat pack applications trying to induce hot flashes. But she got another grant a few years ago to sleep deprive the marmosets, because we know that as humans age, they sometimes have difficulty with sleeping, and that can sometimes lead to cognitive challenges and may be related to the development of things like Alzheimer's disease. And the plan was to perform these sleep deprivation experiments on marmosets at UMass Amherst. The experimenter's name, by the way, is Anya LaCruz. So what LaCruz was hoping to do was take a bunch of marmosets in her laboratory at UMass Amherst and wake them up several times over the course of a night so that they would lose about 4.5 hours of sleep each night. And the plan was to do this 3 nights a week for 2 months running. And the way that they were going to do this was to blare loud sounds, basically for 6 minutes every 15 minutes over the course of a night, and keep these poor animals awake for, you know, approximately 4.5 hours each night. For reasons that we don't entirely understand at this moment, at the last minute, they decided to take these experiments, and instead of doing them at the UMass Amherst campus, which is what the grant application said they were going to do, was to shuttle this whole thing over to the Wisconsin National Primate Research Center, which is at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, which doesn't make it any less horrible for the marmosets. It was just going to happen in a different state. Now, needless to say, PETA wrote to everybody. We wrote to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, you know, the chancellor there. We wrote to the Institutional Animal Care and Use Committee there, asking them not to approve these experiments. We wrote to the funding agency, which was NIH, telling them, absolutely, you cannot do these experiments on these poor, tiny, vulnerable monkeys at any institute. Don't do it at Amherst. Don't do it at University of Wisconsin-Madison. Just don't do it. And we found out just last month that, unfortunately, they did perform 1 night of sleep deprivation on these marmosets, but that's it. And now they're not going to do it anymore. So while I would have preferred that they didn't do this to any marmosets anywhere at all, I am very glad that they stopped this before they got into this 2-month-long, horrible, chronic sleep deprivation procedure that they were planning on doing on these monkeys. So we're considering this at least a small victory for the moment, because, again, 2 months worth of sleep deprivation on these tiny, less than 1 pound animals could have been absolutely detrimental to their health. In fact, the IACUC at the University of Wisconsin Madison classified these procedures as USDA pain classification E, which is sort of unrelieved pain, which is just horrible for the animals. So the good news is, thanks to us writing to everybody and thanks to people who support PETA and support PETA's efforts, writing to University of Wisconsin-Madison, calling the University of Wisconsin-Madison and absolutely demanding they not do this, it seems like these stopped before they got to the worst stages. And that's really good news for the marmosets down there.
That is encouraging to hear that, you know, this kind of activism has results. And so what can our listeners do to get involved in this effort, especially here in the Valley at UMass Amherst? What can folks do, you know, maybe who are not students, who like would letters to the editor be something that folks can do easily to draw attention to this issue? And how can they follow this on your PETA website or get on an email list like we are for this show? You know, tell our listeners what they can do to help with this cause, because we really want to end this torture. We want to close this torture lab at UMass. It's just a disgrace to this community to have this operating right here in, you know, what everybody calls the Happy Valley. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I it is a blight to what is, as you mentioned, just a wonderful community there. So the first thing I would suggest that people do is go to our website. So that's PETA, PETA.org, and then you can go to PETA.org/Amherst, which I know everybody there knows how to spell, where you can find more detailed information about these experiments, as well as take like immediate action, which can include anything from calling the chancellor at UMass Amherst or sending a quick email to the chancellor at UMass Amherst and demanding that they stop these experiments. But some of the other actions you mentioned, absolutely, writing a letter to the editor or an opinion piece to local newspapers to make sure that this issue stays at the forefront of the local community's mind is fantastic. And as you mentioned, PETA is always having actions or protests or demonstrations in the Amherst area at the campus, but also in the community at large to make sure that the community at large knows what's going on and can add their voice to ours in demanding that these experiments end. And all of that information you can find at PETA's website, you know, what actions you can take, how to get more involved, how to get yourself on an action list where you can get notified when PETA is doing an activity in your area related to this or other animal advocacy activities that we tend to have going on all the time around here. Yeah, absolutely. But you can call the university. I think that while I would love to believe that the university would do the right thing for its own sake, meaning that they would terminate these experiments because they are extremely harmful to the marmosets and they are scientifically worthless to the human population, that alone should be reason enough to stop. I think that because the university gets a portion of every NIH grant that this experimenter, Anya LaCruz, gets, money talks and money corrupts. And I think that pressure from the local community, whether it's students, faculty, or just the Happy Valley community saying, we don't want this here, would go a long way. And so making your voice heard through an email from our website or on your own, from your own account, making a phone call would be fantastic. I think that the more they realize how many people are opposed to this, the more they may be willing to end it. And I think that individuals taking action for these sorts of things is the way forward. It's the only way that anything's ever going to get done.
Well, Dr. Catherine Rowe, you know, we want to thank you so much for being on the show and for, you know, educating us about this, I don't know what to call it, you know, this horrific situation that is happening at the premier educational facility in Massachusetts, right here in Amherst, Mass. And we're going to link to all of this on our blog, and we'll continue to follow this story. And just really want to thank you so much for the activism, for the leadership, and for the compassion and, you know, caring about life and about other creatures on this that we supposedly share this planet with, and that we have to start treating all being with respect, because that's how we can start to heal, you know, this system that is just so oppressive, not only to humans, but to all life on the planet. So again, thank you so much. Keep up the great work, and we'll continue to advocate for the closing of this animal torture lab at UMass Amherst.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Hopefully we'll have an update soon to let you know that it's ended, but for now we need people's help. So PETA.org/Amherst. There'll be a list of things people can do from there.
All right. Thanks. Thanks again.
Thank you.
We are back.
Yeah. So I think that we need to keep following this issue at UMass until, I don't know what it's going to take for the university to stop torturing small defenseless animals. What will it take? I don't know. But I think that the students there, they need to understand that they're on a campus that has this horrific animal experimenting happening right on campus. But then this researcher is also trying to push programs out onto other universities. I mean, this is really disturbing stuff, and we need to follow this. This needs to come to an end, and it's going to take people making pressure, write a letter to the editor, you know, call out this administration at UMass that is enabling this kind of antisocial, anti-animal, really unbelievable behavior. And let's stop it.
Yeah, it's a dark mark on the science. That's what that is. Okay, this is, let me see, something else. Oh, I remember. Listen to your mother. This is Dio saying adios.
Yeah, and this is Glenn Ayers. And remember, folks, don't torture animals.
Yeah, that's good advice, Glenn, I must say.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.